I've just turned cassette tape number 5 from side A to side B. The 7.5-inch reel on a woolen sack is almost to its very end. I have only been able to find these two reels of tape on interviewing Mom and Dad, and I at this point I don't quite know what we're going to see on this little bit of tape that's left. Just a comment, you've noticed on listening to these tapes that it seems like there are a lot of children playing and having fun in the background. Now this taping occurred in Ogden, where Mom and Dad were living. I think it was there on 28th Street on the north side, just above Jefferson. They gave the address of that place they were living at that time in one of these tapes somewhere. But I think it was probably our own children. Shireen would have been about 15 at that time, and then they'd been on down to lots of younger children. So I think that background of kids having fun was probably the children of Ace Tracy Hall and Ida Roselle Hall.
Mm-hmm. He could tell me all about it. And I want to know why he wasn't a Mormon. He says, "Oh, I'm a Catholic."
That settled
the whole thing. The whole controversy. And then I went to the URA Auto Court and was able to put Books of Mormons in there. Something had never been there before in any of them places. Then I went to the Croft Auto Court and put in Book of Mormons there. 14 courts. I put in 14 Books of Mormon for the courts and one for the manager. It's 15.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went to the library and got permission to put the Book of Mormon, Doctrine and Covenants, Pearl of Great Price, and What of the Mormons in the library there.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Cooks was librarian. She said, "Yes, you can put them in." So they're supposed to furnish them if the libraries will accept them. Well, I wrote in about them, and time went on and on and on. I thought, well, I'll get the books myself. I can't wait any longer.
Mm-hmm.
So they might change their mind. So I went and got the books myself and ordered them from Denver and put them in. I put in 2 Books of Mormon, Pearl of Great Price, Doctrine and Covenants, and the book, What of the Mormons, by Hinckley.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name, first name?
Bryant.
Bryant Hinckley. The sectarian minister there. Had a nice talk with him. First they wanted to tell us off, but they changed their mind about it. He had a Book of Mormon.
Now that was the second tape that I have, ended abruptly as though there were more conversation. So I've got to go look through my things again to see if I can't find another tape. There are many other things I'm sure that I would have liked to ask my mom and dad. We didn't say much about Carlin, Nevada. Well, I found another tape in a box, one of these 7.5-inch ones for the woolen sack recorder. And it had Howard Hall written on it so lightly that I'd overlooked it before. Now let's play it and see if there's something on it.
Saturday, 1959. I'm at the home of my father and mother, Howard Hall and Florence Hall, and I'm going to see if I can get some more information on this tape. Dad, why don't you tell me about when you were herding cows for these other fellows when you were a youngster?
Yeah, it was about 1898 and 1899.
How old were you about?
10 years old. And I started herding cows for Bugs Burt and Dick Richards. In those days, the people in Ogden had a milk cow. And these milk cows were herded on the Weber River bottoms in the summertime. And I worked for Bugs Burt and Dick Richards, herding the cows and watching them in the river bottoms, and then helped to take them home in the evening. They left the responsibility up to me most of the time while I sat in the shade taking it easy at 28th and Pacific. Now, these cows were taken down 28th Street across the Union Pacific tracks to the river bottoms.
Well, whose cows were they? Were they their parents' cows or lots of people?
They belonged to the people of Ogden. The families in those, the people in those days had a family cow. And
you mean they were being paid to take care of the cows, but they were subcontracting it to you?
That's right.
How much do you think they were getting paid a day for it?
I don't really know what they got a month for the cows, but
how much did they pay you?
They paid me 50 cents a day. I think they were getting in the neighborhood of $2 a month for each cow.
About how many cows were involved?
Oh, they had 100 to 150 cows in the herd.
Quite a responsibility for 50 cents a day. You said you you rode their pony to herd the cows?
Yes, Bugs Burt had a bay pony with a white face. I got a lot of enjoyment riding bareback on that pony and herding the cows. I thought that was really fun. And I remember one night I had trouble with the cow getting it home on 26th Street where the Scowcroft home was. It's the Myers mortuary now. And I had real trouble with that cow getting on the lawns and running all over the shrubs. But that's, I believe, the only trouble I had most of the time. When you get the cows to their home, where they'd just go right in. That's all there was to it. They knew where they belonged.
What time in the morning would you get these? Would you go pick up the cows at the homes then in the morning?
No, they would pick them up in the morning.
Bert and...
Bugs Burt and Dick Richards would pick up the cows and bring them down. And
what time of day do you think they'd do this?
They'd get them down there by between 8 and 9 o'clock every morning to the river bottoms.
And then you'd herd them during the day?
I'd herd them during the day and round them up in the evening.
What time in the evening?
I think it was about 5 o'clock to get them rounded up to bring them back home.
What time would you get the last cow back home?
Well, it generally took about 2 hours to get them all put away.
And then someone in the family milked the cow.
Yeah, so that's right. It seemed like anybody else knew it but the Chinese at that time.
Dad, you told me on the last tape something about you working at the Utah Canning?
Utah Canning Company.
Now, where was that plant located?
29th and Pacific Avenue.
Is it still
on the
west side
of the track, still in the same place. I believe it was the first cannery in Utah. It was called the Pioneer Canning Company at that time.
Well, now you're telling me how they put the cans together.
used to have Chinese solder the lids on the cans. They had they were the only ones that knew anything about it at that time, how to do that job. So they were considered experts at that kind of work.
Were the metal cans built about the same as they are today?
No, the tin cans were soldered in those days. Now today, they're what is pressed together.
And just a mechanical crimping. Did they have a soldering iron?
Yes, they had a soldering iron.
How long would it take them to solder a can shut?
I don't know. I didn't see the process of the canning going on. Of course, that went on after the cans got away from the fillers and into another room.
Why don't you tell me something about your early railroading days and when you first went on the job as a fireman. Was that the first job you had after you were a call boy, was as a fireman on the railroad?
Yes, it was fireman. Firing the switch engine in Ogden Yards, 12 hours a day.
Do you remember the first train you fired on or anything about your first experience firing?
Well, they used to pick on me to go. When they needed a fireman on the road, they'd call on me. And I'd fired lots of engines from Ogden to Evanston while I was still working as a fireman in the Ogden Yard. We'd work 12 hours a day, and then us boys, we'd go uptown and have a good time. Lots of times the call boy would catch me uptown. 9 or 10 o'clock in the evening, and I'd go right down and go out on the train, work all night.
What kind of a good time that you had in that town?
Mom wants to know what kind of a good time you were having uptown.
Oh, we'd just go to the chili parlors and eat chili, and we'd go down to Murphy's and we'd have Beano's, get a French loaf of bread, pull out the insides of it and fill it with pork and beans, and have Beano's and beer. We thought that was quite a feast.
Tell us, children, the grandchildren, that. You weren't
around then. We didn't know any different, I guess. That's the way we did things. I used to fire on he'd call me generally on a helper engine and go to Wasatch and then turn around and come back to Ogden.
Yeah, where's
help
Wasatch?
The train up the hill. Wasatch is about 12 miles this side of Evanston.
Oh.
That's the top of the hill there. Evanston's about 7,000 feet elevation, and Ogden is a little over 4,000 feet elevation.
Well, you'd probably have to shovel coal all the way on that uphill trip, wouldn't you?
Yes, you'd have to shovel coal all the way. So it was pretty hard work.
Yeah.
And you'd have to get water and coal at Echo, use up a tank of coal by the time you got to Echo, and then you'd have to use another tank of coal from Echo to Evanston.
How many tons of coal would you shovel on that run, do you imagine?
Oh, I imagine you shovel 20 ton of coal.
No wonder you're so strong, Dad.
No wonder he's dwarfed. He's real tall.
I fired on the Oregon Short Line from Pocatello to Montpelier. And then I went breaking on passenger on the from Ogden to Salt Lake and Pocatello, and then they sent me up on the Montana run from from Pocatello to Butte, Montana.
How many years did you work as a fireman before you were brakeman?
Oh, I worked about 2.5 years, and worked a year on a little over a year on as a brakeman.
Is there any seniority, or what is considered the best job here? Is a brakeman supposed to be a better job than a fireman?
You know, I didn't consider it, but I didn't like that job breaking after I took it. There wasn't anything to do.
Does it pay more money?
No, it paid less money, too.
Huh.
So I figured the firing job was the best job.
What's a brakeman supposed to do, anyway?
Well, the rear brakeman's supposed to act as a flagman. And in case you stop over 2 or 3 minutes, you got to get out and flag the rear end of the train to protect it. You know, if the train pulls into a siding, you've got to line up the switch after you pull out of the siding. The front brakeman opens the switch to let you in on the siding, and the rear brakeman closes the switch after you leave the siding.
Two brakemen on a train?
Two brakemen on a train.
Is it still that way today?
Yes, still that way now. The firemen don't have anything to do on a diesel engine, so the railroads call that feather bedding now. Because the firemen, of course, can look out for signals. I think if anything went wrong, the engineer got sick, well, the fireman could take over. Take over and run the engine, or if he couldn't run it, he at least stopped the train.
Would the firemen run the old steam engines at all, or would the engineer do all the running of the engine?
He'd do all the running. I remember one time we stopped to, why can't I think of the name of that town? We stopped to load stock, to load cattle. And we didn't have any air in the cars, and of course the slack had run out. Well, of course, having the experience on a switch engine, I knew how to handle the engine, you know, to spot cars mm-hmm. without air. Well, the engineer didn't savvy that very well. And he thought I was beefing about it or something. He says, if you can do any better, you get over here and do it yourself. So I got over there and we loaded up the train of cattle. And he said, over there, firing. Well, I fire on the engine. Of course, there isn't much firing to do when you're spotting cars and loading. But I had loaded up that cattle train when we got it loaded up, then we started on for Montpelier. Of course, then he took over. Well, we had gone a few miles, and I started to shake the grates to clean them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the grates got cocked on me, and I couldn't move them. And I told the engineer to get down and straighten up the grates for me. I guess he didn't know what I said, and he kept started shaking him, and I had to hit him on the back. I says, cut it out, there won't be any fire in there. You have all the fire down.
Down on the railroad ties. Huh?
Have it all down in the ash pan, you know.
Well, how about ashes on
there? Those ash that have an ash pan to hold the ashes and clinkers so that they won't get out onto the roadbed.
Burn up the roadbed?
Yes, it would if they got out. And they have screens. Of course, they've got to have screens for the air to come up under the grates to burn your fuel. See, they got to have air for the under the grates for the fuel.
When would you empty the ashes?
Well, you'd have to empty them when you got to halfway between Montpelier and if you had a dirty fire, you'd have to clean it there too. take on coal and water, and if your fire was dirty, you'd have to clean it. But the coal was pretty good. You never had to clean the fire very often.
What do you mean by a dirty fire?
Clinkers, generally. If you got clinkers in your fire, well, then the air can't get up through the grates, and you don't get any steam.
Mm-hmm.
When to get the most heat out of your fire to make steam, the fire's got to be clean, and the grates have got to be completely covered. If there's an air spot, if there's a hole in your grates, well, the cold air is going to come up through there and cut your steam down, see? Cut your heat down in the firebox.
Hmm. Would you have some kind of a rake then that you could rake to keep the fire even, or how would you
do
that?
No, you just shovel the coal into that hole in the fire there.
Well, I see.
With your scoop shovel. And in that way, the way to fire a locomotive and to keep up the steam is to keep your fire all over the grates, and then to, when you see white heat in your fire, that's where you want to put the coal.
Hmm.
Where it's red, well, it's still, the coal is still burning, see?
Mm-hmm.
You want to put it there, because if you do, it'll probably make a clinker.
Hmm.
But where you see the white heat, that's where you want to put your coal. And to fire the side sheets and the back sheets is the best way to get your heat. And the exhaust works on your the exhaust of the engine works on the draft.
Mm-hmm.
See, to draw the air up under your fire and make your fire burn brightly.
Mm-hmm.
It burns your coal faster too. See, with that forced draft on your coal, on mm-hmm. your fire.
Was the shovel about the only tool that a fireman has then?
That's all I had, was a shovel in those days. They didn't have any stokers like they have today. Well, I guess there isn't any stokers anymore. I guess they've done away with steam completely. And coal, firing with coal.
What make of engines were some of these engines that you used to fire?
American locomotive. That's from Schenectady, isn't it?
Yes.
Baldwin locomotives at Philadelphia. Porter locomotives. I believe they were... I don't know whether they came from New England or not. I don't remember now. We had the Porter locomotives and the Baldwin locomotives and the American locomotives.
How would they rate the power of these locomotives? Horsepower or?
Yeah, horsepower.
What would the horsepowers run?
I've forgotten now. I believe it was around 1,500 horsepower, something like that.
Uh-huh.
Can't tell you exactly. That didn't progress with the...
Let's talk a little about your dad's transfer business, Pop. You're telling me about his trucks.
Well, the first truck he got was a Ford half-ton truck. And he used to get around, before that, they had a one horse and a wagon for the express work. And when he got that half-ton truck, we were really busy hauling trunks and sacks of coal and bales of hay.
You said this truck was the first truck used in the transfer business in Ogden, is that right?
That's right. What used to haul pianos on it and small pieces of furniture. And when Scowcrofts were rushed, well, they'd call on us to deliver groceries to the stores. And Boyle's Furniture would have us haul furniture. I remember one time around Christmas time, we We were working early and late to get out this furniture for Christmas, before Christmas time. The night before Christmas, I think we were working way up until the morning. We were so busy getting out those orders.
What year was that truck, that first Ford truck?
1913
Model T, one-half-ton truck.
Yes, that's right.
What was the body like on that truck?
Well, the body was made here in Ogden. Just bought the chassis and had the body made.
I see.
The body, you could haul a ton of coal on that body. Hauled many ton of coal on it. Made deliveries of coal. So, really, business really boomed. And then he got a 10 and a half van. It really wasn't large enough for the work. This here was a Nash truck. I told you some of the experiences I had with the Nash.
That's right. That's truck. The one that you had all the load on the back and almost lifted the front wheels off the ground.
1,000 pounds of fruit on the back of the truck leaving Provo, besides the furniture.
Well, Mom was mentioning that your father got a lot of competition in the transfer business. What was that about?
Well, other firms advanced, you know. They got larger vans and more trucks. And he didn't go ahead and make any progress in the business, so he lost out.
What was the name of that transfer company that bought those great big vans? They got all the business away from your father. Who were they?
Oh, there was coal transfer and the Ogden Transfer Company. Ogden Transfer and Coal Transfer, they were the largest transfers. They had a lot of vans drawn by horses. So when they turned over to trucks, why, then they were... We're riding the swim again. Left us behind.
Was the transfer business good in Ogden because this was kind of a railroad center, or did that have anything to do with it?
Yes, that's right. It was good on account of it being a railroad center. Junction here of the railroads. We used to haul a lot of freight from the freight house to the business houses.
It seems to me that I can remember Granddad had quite a bit of business with Ogden Iron Works. Was that it?
That's right. Yes, he had a truck working there all the time. Then Brother Sam took that over after he quit business.
The Ogden Iron Works was kind of a foundry, wasn't it?
Yes, foundry. And all kinds of steel work.
And Granddad would cart the steel around to make deliveries, or what?
Making shipments out of town, generally, to take them...
Haul them down the railroad.
Take them down the railroad, down to the deep... The freight depot.
I can remember as a youngster that I used to like to go to Grandma Hall's house there on Benford, just above Wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember a few things about that house. How long did you live in that particular house, or did you ever live in that house? You never lived in that
house?
There,
no.
Well,
I married your mother.
Lived in the house of our own.
Well, who did live there? Granddad and grandmother, or?
Yes, and Betty Ann. Jan Hensley lived with them. They took her over, and my brother Sam, he lived there.
Before he got married?
Yes, and after he got married.
After he got married, before he got married. He's still there.
What year did your brother Sam get married? Were you married first?
I was married first. He was married about a year later, about 1919.
Well, now, you had a brother, Ralph, who died, and a sister, May. Is that right?
That's right.
What do you remember in connection with those?
Brother Ralph, he was married to Grace Evans, and they had two children. He was a switchman for the Ogden Union Railway and Depot Company.